you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Cool. All right. You ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
Let me tell you what a hard day's work looks like. It's waking up before the sun comes
listen,
up to
and
pack
listen, take
18
notes.
Hours of hard physical labor into a single day during harvest. It's putting on your work boots, running tractors, plowing fields, and bandaging up calloused hands
Ben,
so that you can wake up
boots?
The following day and do it
I
all
didn't
over
think
again.
So.
It's worrying about crops when the weather is too dry, too wet, too hot, or too cold. It's exhaustion in every bone in your body, but knowing that people and jobs depend on you to keep putting one foot in front of the other. All over Illinois, there are people like me, farmers, yes, but also truck drivers, plumbers, electricians, grocery workers, mechanics, and so many others who put in hours of sweat to provide for their families. These regular working folks make our state great, and they'll be the driving force behind our state's recovery. People like you and your Gold Coast friends are running our home into the ground. Governor Pritzker, you're spending millions of dollars of your family's money to attack me for how I run my business, the business that I built with my own two hands. You sit around with your soft hands laughing with your snooty friends at the downstate farmer who thinks that he can make a difference. Well, you got one thing wrong. I don't think I can make a difference. I know I can make a difference because I know what it takes to work hard and build something, and you don't have a clue.
Were you writing all that down?
I got it down, you know, a DB, Darren Bailey, the hog farmer from downstate Illinois, not a hog farmer. you know, I got to tell you, we have an abundance of downstate people on the Ben Jarofsky show. Did you know that, D? We have a lot of downstate people.
Did you know that? That's me.
Yeah. One of our downstate... Bob Diver for president. Yeah, I agree. Downstate person chimed in with that. Well, we have abundance. A lot of people don't know this. The Ben Jarofsky show has an Alton correspondent. His name is Alex. It's true he's never come on the show, but he's busy preparing for the show. But one of the things I always tease Dennis about is how he gets up early and chops wood. And it's like the downstate work ethic. And whenever I hear that riff, I've heard it now twice. No, actually three times because I heard it on my own independently. I think of you getting up early with your dad, going out and chopping the wood. None of which ever happened.
No, that did happen.
You're kidding.
No, my dad would do that. Like,
wait, would you do it with him?
Hell yeah. Like my dad had a DUI and he couldn't drive. So he'd be like, all right, I need you to pick me up at 7 in the morning. And dude, I show up at 7:03. What the hell? You're late. Like, dude, we're just going to go chop wood.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Then we'd go to a bar at like 7, 8 in the morning. It was called the Dew Drop In. They had breakfast, biscuits and gravy.
Dew Drop In. Get it, ladies and gentlemen? Wow, that's pretty clever. Wait a minute. So if you got up at 7 to chop wood and you went to the Dew Drop In by 8, there's not a lot of wood chopping going on. I'm just saying.
We were just starting the day. Then we'd go out to the field and start chopping wood for like 5 or 6 hours.
Oh, so time out. So you didn't get up at 7 to chop wood. You got up 7 to go to the Dew Drop In and eat.
Uh-huh.
I get it. Okay.
I was eating.
What was Daddy D doing?
I was eating.
Daddy D was imbibing father-son moments. Anyway, DB, Darren Bailey, that's the downstate work ethic. I'm with you 100%, man. I got soft hands too. Look,
big time, big time.
Got soft hands, but I don't shake anymore. I didn't know if I told you this, Dennis. I probably told you this. I just forgot. I've since COVID stopped shaking hands. I love it. I'm all elbows. So you know what I mean. I've been going out more. I told you this. So whenever I go to like just parties, the wedding, reader functions, what have you, first Tuesdays, people come up to me, hey man, I want to shake hands. Elbow bump. Come on now. And so people are like, oh, yeah, I like you. So,
yeah, that's what they're saying.
Bailey, I may have soft hands, but these elbows, oh boy, are they sharp. Ow!
I love how you think those people are like, oh, that's cool. They're probably like, what a weirdo.
There's many times where I'm like in a public place and I go off on one of my riffs. And then I look at the people that I'm riffing to, like, so some incredibly nerdy knowledge of politics that normal human beings would not have. And the people will be looking at me like, wow. You know, even Terry Cosgrove, Mr. I know everything about politics, state of Illinois. I'm always correcting him because he's always getting stuff wrong. And even now, he makes fun of me. You know, you're in trouble with Terry Cosgrove saying, oh, you know too much about politics.
All right, everybody, your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, August 9th, is brought to you by, we haven't even done the intro yet, SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, every now and again, what kind of pot to smoke, and so much more, including Collins. You haven't smoked pot since the 70s.
Ben. 80s.
80s, oh, excuse me. 40 years ago. Including Collins from our very own Ben Jarofsky. Chicago Reader, ChicagoReader.com. And if you want to help out this program, you can. ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. J-O-R-A. V as in victory, S-K-Y. It is Tuesday, August 9th, and this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, I wonder how her summer's going. Our good friend, Delmarie Cobb. And now your host, don't try to shake his hand.
Elbows only.
Elbows only. Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Mar-a-Lago Busted Tuesday, and here's why. Well, you know why, ladies and gentlemen. The weekend got a little more interesting. Actually, it was a Monday event, but I think of this as a three-day weekend. Remember the old days, D? When we come back from this, I go, so D, how was your weekend?
Yeah.
And then you would always go, it's Tuesday.
Seemed like you were going to do that. And I was really looking forward to you asking me how my weekend was.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's rewind. So D, how was your weekend?
It was all right.
Okay, there we go. Set me up like a bowling pin and then knocked me down. Anyway, yesterday, Monday. Man, my folks, this is the sound of my phone blowing up. When word broke that Donnie Trump, his Floridian home, his mansion at Mar-a-Lago was busted by the FBI. And man, everybody go, the happiest man in America yesterday? You guys can all guess it. Monroe Anderson. Here's a little inside. Monroe led the raid. Yes. He put on a pith helmet. And he was like leading the raid. So I heard from absolutely everybody in my political universe yesterday and just all the speculation, like what are they looking for? What do they hope to find? Why are they doing it, et cetera, and so forth. We'll be talking about it all week. But the interesting thing is that I got to give MAGA credit. I really do. And I'm not being 100% sarcastic here, maybe 50%. But I got to MAGA credit because they hit the ground running. With a choreographed and just like everybody singing from the same page response to this. That was an outrageous act of political vengeance that the FBI has become a political hit team that they went beyond their powers and authority. That Donald Trump is somehow or other a victim that is prosecutorial overreach. Et cetera, and so forth. And not only did they say it, like, in front of the cameras, not only did MAGA have a well-choreographed response in front of the cameras to the raid, but I have been getting nonstop, ladies and gentlemen, for at least 12 hours, probably more like 24 hours, email solicitations from various MAGA groups regarding the raid. So, I mean, think about that. They hit the ground running. And, you know, I got to give them credit for that. in a weird way. Delmarie Cobb will be coming on the show real soon, a Democratic political consultant, strategist. She's been around for a while. Get her thoughts on this, how MAGA has responded. Here's one. And by the way, every single email solicitation of outrage I get, every single email I get with outrage about what happened to Donald Trump and the FBI raid at his home comes with a solicitation, a request for money. So they're not stupid. Here we go. Here's one. Breaking Trump. Drop everything. Biden's FBI search. Witch hunt against President Trump. Marco Rubio sent me this one. Mar-a-Lago raid. Where does Biden's Department of Justice find the time? Here, breaking news. Never in America has anything so outrageous happened. And I also got one from Herschel Walker, weighing in from Georgia. He's outraged. Herschel Walker, he's outraged by the raid of Mar-a-Lago, and he wants people to send him money. And I got to say this, and I'm going to put this in Delmarie's ear and get her response on this one. But there's a part of me, as much as I dislike where the Republican Party is going, to put it mildly, as much as I just really cannot take MAGA, I realize that if it were reversed, that if some Democratic president, ex-president, had his home raided by FBI under a Republican president, more likely than not, I'd be screaming from the rooftops, too. I just got to be honest. I remember back in the 90s, Delmarie Cobb's going to smile at this one. My mom and I would have it. My mom, who may she rest in peace, diehard political junkie. I probably inherited this from her. She loved politics, and I'll never understand this one, Delmarie. My mom loved Bill Clinton. And when Kenneth Starr went after Clinton over Monica Lewinsky and the scandal that erupted in the White House in the second term of Clinton's presidency, my mom was outraged. And I remember once Clinton gave a speech where he said, I'll never step down. And my mom was in tears. She was so moved by it, by Clinton's speech. Now, that was before email. My mom never had email, never had the internet. So it wasn't the profusion of email solicitations. But had there been, there would have been. Give money, send money. So I must confess, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't feel bad for Donald Trump. Quite the contrary. I kind of like, well, the chickens have come home to roost, to, you know, use Malcolm X's line from the 60s, Donald Trump. And I had a smile at the rhetoric, the anti-FBI rhetoric coming out of Law and Order types like defund the FBI. I think that was Marjorie Taylor Greene's statement. Now they have a defund the FBI movement. Is that ironic or what? But I have to admit that had the roles been reversed, there's a good chance that I would be screaming as loud as MAGA. And that's kind of where we are with partisan politics in the United States of America. I must make that confession. All right, I'm going to bring on our dear friend Delmarie Cobb. It's been way too long since she's been on the show. Welcome back, Delmarie.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am very fired up, as you know, Delmarie, and I've already had like two pre-show conversations. She's fired up too. So we have a whole list of things to talk about, Delmarie, since the last time we were on the show. At the top of the list was Kansas and abortion. And we'll get to that because it's been preempted. I think you'll agree by the raid on Donald Trump, just momentarily preempted, I just want to say, by the raid on Donald Trump's house. And you heard a little bit of my initial take about the Republican reaction, the response, which was very well choreographed and instantaneous, I might add, almost from the moment news broke that the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago. Republicans were responding with outrage. What's your general take on the raid, what it means, and also the Republican response?
What took you so long? That's my general response. I couldn't be happier. We know Donald Trump did a million things wrong. And, it's just a matter of them all coming to light. You know, he's proven to be Teflon, and that can only last so long when there's so much evidence against him. Something's got to break through at some point. And I think that, you know, finally we're seeing it. I mean, there's just been little bitty things that are happening, but I think overall, hopefully, right will win out over wrong. And that's what you saw with the Alex Jones verdict, and what you saw with Steve Bannon, and hopefully we're going to see it with Donald Trump.
Well, God, you gave me a lot to respond to in terms of Steve Bannon. He of course, was convicted by a jury. I think it was in Virginia, may have been Maryland. I can't remember exactly where, Dummery, but he was convicted of charges of not cooperating, obstructing justice with Congress or not cooperating with Congress. Can't remember the exact conviction. It was a misdemeanor. But immediately he went on the attack, and he said that his congressional Democratic congressmen and women who are leading the investigation of the insurrection of January 6th had better keep their notes, because if the Republicans are victorious in November, take back the House, there will be an investigation of the investigators. And that line was repeated, updated, if you will, by Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, yesterday in response to the raid at Trump. At Mar-a-Lago. I don't know if you saw this, Dummery, but Kevin McCarthy said, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, FBI, Christopher Wray, you better have your notes. You better keep all your records, because if we win in November, we will be investigating you in regards of whether this is overreach. Do you think this is an issue that will have traction for MAGA in the upcoming months heading into the midterms?
Well, we know that that's what they're going to do. Is this is the party of revenge and vindictiveness and overreaching. And this is not a party that cares about, the Republican Party is not a party that cares about advancing people. We see that over and over. It has one, they're concerned about one thing, and that's power. And that's all they're concerned about. And what's so pitiful in so many regards is that the MAGA supporters don't get it. They don't see it. They have truly been brainwashed.
Oh, that is clear. See, I actually thought, I feel that this will, I thought all along, Dummery, that this was not going to be your typical sleepy midterm election, okay, which is, you know, what we're used to, the passion of a presidential race, and with all the stakes involved, the high stakes involved, usually fades 2 years in. And so the party that's out of power in the White House has more of an advantage. But between Kansas, and we'll get to that, and the abortion rulings of the Supreme Court and the laws that many legislators, Republican legislators throughout the country are passing, the abortion issue will really motivate people. And now I do believe that the MAGA chorus, and I agree with you there, I call it a cult. This has them fired up. So I think this will actually spur more MAGA people to show up. And I think that the Republicans know that, and that's why they're pushing it so hard. So I do believe that this will be a different kind of midterm election. Your thoughts?
No, I agree with you. That's exactly what they're hoping will happen, is that their side of the aisle will be so incensed and motivated that they'll turn out in droves and to win. And that's what we cannot let happen as Democrats. We cannot let that happen because too much is at stake. We see where they will take the party if they're in control. And they're just salivating at this point because the margin is so close. I mean, what they did with abortion and the fact that you have all these states and all these governors absolutely ramming the banning of abortion down people's throats, when all the polls show that the majority of Americans don't feel that way, don't want it abolished completely. And so that's why Kansas is so important, because to see the faces of the elected officials after the vote say they were in shock. I mean, how are you in shock when for years the polls have shown you that this is where the country was on the issue of abortion?
Well, we'll get into abortion. I have a lot of thoughts, and I'd love to get your thoughts about it, too. Just hold off. I just, one last thing about the raid. I just saw this article right before it went on the air, and you're going to get a little delight out of this one. All right, so longtime listeners of the show know that Delmarie Cobb's a big fan of Hillary Clinton. She was Hillary Clinton's spokesperson in the state of Illinois in 2020. And as such, she's been on my show debating various lefties. Delmarie would be supporting Hillary, and the lefties would be supporting Bernie or even left of that. That great showdown debate that I had set up, but that you couldn't do because you were officially a spokesperson. You versus Carlos Ramirez Rose at the Hideout would have been one of the classics of all time, Delmarie, because he's a pretty good debater, Alderman Ramirez Rosa. And I would have really looked forward to it. But anyway, here we go. Hillary, this broke in the Washington Post about an hour ago. Hillary Clinton hawks, quote, but her emails merchandise after FBI searches Trump residence. And finally, Delmarie, Democrats are picking up on the game that this is a Trump game. Immediately hit the ground running. Get your merch out there. So make fun of the opposite side. Taunt them, tease them, trash talk them. Hillary Clinton. Now, the difference is, in this particular event, it looks like Hillary Clinton is raising money to help political campaigns, where I think Donnie Trump is just putting it in his pocket. But anyway, the merchandise, which includes the slogan, but her emails, benefits Clinton's political organization, Onward Together. Every but her emails had her shirt sold helps Onward Together partners defend democracy, build a progressive bench, and fight for our values, Clinton tweeted. Just saying. Come on, Delmarie. We must get a little delight out of Hillary taking this opportunity to get just a little good tweak or punch in to the people who tormented her so much.
Oh, there's been a lot of delights since the 2020 and 2016 elections. I mean, so much of what was done to her has been has come out in the wash. It's just amazing. I know she's sitting back and she's saying, mm-hmm. Yep, I told you. You know, she told us who Donald Trump was all along. She was telling us who he was. And, you know, the media was very complicit in helping him become the president. There was this sense of inevitability. How could she lose? She was Hillary Clinton. And my position was always, she was a woman. How could she win? And otherwise, we would have had a woman president before now. And so that was my position, is that we can't sit back and take this for granted. We've got to fight every step of the way. And that just did not happen. And the media gave this man billions of dollars in free advertising.
And what do you think that's all about? The media's love with Donald Trump. It's infatuation. It's it's just bending over backwards every time he speaks out. Media attention is showered on him. What do you think that's all about?
Well, I think it's about ratings. I mean, and they said as much during 2016 that it was about ratings. That whenever he was on, their ratings peaked, and so it became more about that than it did the safety and welfare of the country. It was about the television networks actually, you know, profiting off of the fact that he was outrageous. And the more outrageous he was, the better. And then they kept justifying it by saying, well, he'll eventually be presidential. And as we saw, he was never presidential.
Yeah. No, he was never presidential. He rewrote the book on what is presidential. He got away with breaking all the conventions and protocols and people that most presidents abide by, and people delighted in it. A story just broke yesterday about John Kelly's book. General Kelly, who was chief of staff, I don't know if you saw this, Del Marie, or this argument they were having in the White House, where Trump was upset with the generals in the military, and he didn't think they were supporting him enough. I can't remember what the particulars were, but just as a general statement, he was upset that they weren't loyal enough. And he said, "Why? I want generals, my generals, to be like Hitler's generals." And it, Del Marie, I mean, I'm like, who would say something like that? Do you follow me? I mean, like, you want U.S. generals to be like Nazi generals? It's so preposterous and outrageous. He meant it as loyalty to him, I suppose. But just the notion that they would be role models. A general in Hitler's Germany would be a role model. Do you follow me, Del Marie? And it's just shattering a protocol, saying things and doing things and behaving in a way that's just outrageous to everything we're being like led to believe is how we should behave in public spheres. And it's completely changed American culture, American politics. Go ahead.
Right. Well, it wasn't even about being loyal to him. It was about, I mean, he meant what he said. It's about being authoritarian. And that's who he is. He wanted to make America into a dictatorship. I mean, if you remember, and very few people remember this, and I've asked a number of people, the first tweet that he sent out after he survived the first impeachment, or the, I think it was the first impeachment, might have been the second impeachment at this point. But the first tweet he sent out had a picture of him and then the words 2020, 2024, 2028, 2032. That's all it said. So he was telling you that his plan was to be president for life. And he was going to do whatever it took to be that. And he told us that all along. As they say, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
And I believe Kim Jong-un. He, remember when he said how his people stand up to attention whenever he says something? That's what I want the people in America to do. The reason he wanted to have a parade with all of our weapons on display is because that's what he saw in these dictator countries. And so he wanted to make America into that same kind of country where everybody would be loyal to him, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And him alone.
Exactly.
They get to disrespect Joe Biden all they want, you know, make up names from memes for him, which, by the way, I believe in free expression, you know, up to a degree. I think like Alex Jones is beyond that. But I don't have any problem with Republicans mocking Democrats. But it's the obvious contradiction right there. All right. So, Del Marie, I began the show by saying that I have to admit I was impressed by the orchestration that the Republicans put together and in response immediately hit the ground running. They knew this was an issue that would matter a lot to their base. They knew their base wanted to hear them on this. And so they pounded and it was orchestrated. It was, everybody was reading from the same page that this was an outrage by the FBI. I don't recall Democrats in the Biden years, in the Obama years, having the same kind of everybody's on the same page of focus. Maybe I'm wrong, and feel free to contradict me on that point if you want, obviously. Were you, just as a political strategist, somebody who's been in this game a long time, were you also on some level impressed by the orchestration of the Republican response?
I am always impressed by the Republicans and their response. I mean, if there's, I have praised them. I'm not happy about it, but I have praised them for years because this is not new. They jump on everything. They all start singing from the same hymnal. Nobody changes the words. It's amazing how it gets to everybody. They all know it right away, what they're supposed to say, the talking points. They don't flinch. They don't blink. They don't care if it's an out and out lie. They don't care if you saw them kill somebody. They're going to tell you they didn't, and they're going to stick to it. And it is just amazing to me. I mean, as a political strategist who's constantly telling my clients to stay on message, I mean, I love it. I can't stand them, but I love that.
So what do you think of their message? The message being that it's overreach. Is there any part of you that agrees with them? That's like, yeah, you went too far, FBI. Is there any part of Del Marie Cobb that feels that way?
Well, certainly if there would be any group of people who would know what overreach looked like, it would be the Republicans. But this is not overreach. By no means is this overreach.
In other words, you feel like it's justified. He's been, and he has been, just ignoring subpoenas, ignoring the law in terms of turning over records. He's been defying them every step of the way. So you had to figure this moment was coming.
I mean, anytime you can take you think you can take papers from the White House and just take them with you, 15 boxes or more, because they don't know what, we don't know what more they're going to find. But that you can just take them with you when everybody knows that all of that is everything that took place in the White House is supposed to be saved for historical purposes. I mean, everything about Donald Trump, he is above the law. The law does not apply to him. It applies to everybody else but me. And that's his attitude about everything.
Yeah. And yet they're the ones crying about rule of law. All right. Before we go shift gears and go into the issue of abortion, I have to ask you, Marjorie Taylor Greene is leading the charge to defund the FBI. And we're in the middle, of course, of a gubernatorial election here in Chicago, in Illinois, where Darren Bay and the Republicans are just pounding the drum on lawlessness that they say is because Democrats have don't show enough respect for law and order. Yesterday, Darren Bailey was endorsed by Johnny Catanzaro, the head of the Fraternal Order of Police here in Chicago, on the grounds that he and Bailey was more sensitive to the needs of police officers and did not submit to Democratic demands to, quote, defund the police, even though, of course, I don't know any Democratic official that'll go anywhere near that phrase. Sometimes, Del Marie, I'm like, I have to like gasp in disbelief at the strange nature of politics, where it's acceptable for Marjorie Taylor Greene to say defund the FBI to the MAGA base that is outraged when a leftist Democrat says that, or just a leftist, not even Democrat, it's usually beyond Democratic Party, says defund the police in terms of local police. I'm not quite sure what to make of it, other than there is no meaning to anything anymore. It's like nihilistic in American politics these days. Your thought on Marjorie Taylor Greene saying defund the FBI?
Well, it's just, you know, more of what I said in terms of they defy logic. Defund the FBI. If you're saying defund the police, you know, oh, my God, you're against law and order. You're against the police. But yet, you know, you can kill police officers and security guards at the Capitol, at the United States Capitol. And that's OK. But heaven forbid you do, you know. We're the party of law and order. We're the party that backs the blue, except when we don't want to, except when you interfere with us, except when we take exception to what you're doing. So, you know, I mean, it just defies logic that they can say these things, and that there are people who hear the contradictions and follow them and believe them and support them. It's like, don't you have a brain of your own to think and to rationalize and to weigh what's absurd and what isn't? These people are absurd. And I'm not saying, I mean, what we're seeing is something that we've never seen before. And it just, I mean, you've got to be frightened as a rational person. You've got to be frightened that it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
What do you mean by, just be a little more specific, what we've seen is something we've never seen before. What are you talking about in particular?
I mean, everything that is happening as a result of Donald Trump in terms of the dismantling of democracy and turning everything that we know that's right on its ear, and saying what's right is wrong and what's wrong is right, and we're just supposed to take them at their word. I mean, what they're doing is just frightening. I mean, it's frightening on so many levels. I mean, and you can't help but go back to the abortion piece and the right to choose and reproductive health and what that means. Because I have always said that MAGA only meant one thing. Make America Great Again meant when women, and that's white women and black women, and people of color knew their place. And the white man was king of his castle. He was king of the economy. He was king of politics. He was king of the world. And that's what they're trying to do. Take women back to being barefoot and pregnant. And even one of the congressmen said, after the Dobbs decision, said, the problem in America today is women working.
And by the way, women working as a necessity to support a household, in addition to women working because they want to have a career. Delmarie Cobb was way ahead of the curve on that one. All right. So, Delmarie, one of the things that I'm learning, having studied and read about the campaign in Kansas with the referendum, the pro-abortion rights referendum, is that, follow me on this one, in many instances, the advocates for abortion rights used language that was traditionally used by MAGA. I found this fascinating because I watched this in reverse when the protests erupted over vaccines and masks. MAGA was outraged and they started talking about choice. It's their choice. So they just shamelessly took the rhetoric of the pro-choice abortion right movement and use it to justify their opposition to mandated vaccines or masks. In Kansas, and I watched some of the commercials that the abortion rights people put out, they talked about liberty and freedom. They used language that MAGA used in a MAGA state. Kansas went 57%, I believe, or 56% for Trump against Biden. So it's a red state. It's like, finally, finally, they're catching on, Delmarie. They used MAGA's language to bolster a position that MAGA opposed, and it worked. I'm like, it worked. I'm so used to watching Democrats and abortion rights activists get pounded, you know, in this sort of propaganda game that's going on out there, Delmarie. But in this case, it worked. Did you have a similar reaction?
No, it did. And what people don't want is you taking away their rights. and the fact that, you know, they were going to equate getting a vaccine and wearing a mask as taking away my right to die, I guess. So now women are saying, you can't take away a freedom that we have and tell us we can't do it and outlaw it. And not, I mean, again, talking about overreach, not only outlaw it, but then punish people, the doctors, and anybody else who assisted women, prevent them from going out of town. I mean, all these things that they're coming up with to make sure that they basically keep women almost in chains. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. I mean, if any woman who doesn't understand what's going on and thinks this is acceptable has to be, needs, you know, has to be crazy.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about a concept, abortion shaming. And we were talking about this at the Hideout Show last week. We had a show talking about abortion rights and the political fallout of it. Terry Cosgrove, your old friend, was there. And much discussion about the concept that the right has been very successful at embarrassing abortion advocates on the issue that it is murder, that somehow there's something to be shameful of. And I have been noticing this. It seems like if you're in favor of a woman's right to choose, just that language right there takes abortion out. Okay, just won't even mention the procedure itself. It's your choice. And so the other side is always putting like a baby's face on it. Like, this is murder. And they'll go to extremes, Del Murray. I just wrote a column about Darren Bailey going to an extreme saying that since Roe, the number of abortions in this country been outrageous, it's worse than the attempted extermination of the Jews in Nazi Germany. He went out and said that. Okay. So they don't flinch in this. I'm starting to get a sense that there's a pushback. And I'll throw this at you. I don't know if you saw this. Neil Steinberg wrote a column yesterday for the Sun-Times, and he was talking about this, and he alluded to, and I believe this is the phrase, I'm doing this off of memory, an embryo the size of a cocktail frink is somehow or other equated with a human life and how absurd and illogical that is. Do you think the public is ready to accept such an argument?
You know, I being a devout Catholic, I understand the sensitivity of all of this. And the wording and all of that. But the other there's another part of that, and that's the reproductive health part of it. And being a Black woman and knowing what the statistics are for Black women in terms of maternal death and having babies who are dying because they don't get the health care that they need. And when you see those numbers and the fact that you're making health care less accessible, reproductive health care less accessible, that becomes a safety issue. That becomes a life issue. And so we have to put it in terms that take the extremism out of it and talk about a woman's right to choose, talk about reproductive health, and talk, those are the things that are important. And that's what we have to talk about. And for me, that's where I come down on the issue in terms of, I cannot tell you what to do with your body. If you're saying you cannot tell me to get a vaccine, then how can you tell me that I should carry a baby to term when you know nothing about my circumstances, even if it's about the health of my circumstances? I'm not talking about the finances. I'm not talking about the choice. I'm talking about the fact that you're taking decisions out of doctors' hands and out of families' hands. Who are you to do that?
Well, that has been the sort of the traditional battle cry of abortion rights activists for as long as I can remember. It's one that appeals to me, absolutely. Just some of the absurdity of the rules that are being passed in states like Indiana, Texas, Del Marie, where they say, all right, well, we will allow abortion in the case of if a woman's life's in danger, but we need proof. And so all of a sudden, you got to go to a judge. And I just can't imagine Republicans accepting anything like this on any issue that matters to them. You know what I'm saying? Like going to a judge is going to make a decision. You got to present evidence to the judge. The doctor has to testify perhaps and get cross-examined by the state. And so I do believe that ultimately that is the sort of the downfall of the Republican argument. And that if this focus on this particular issue remains, it could have a big role in the election. It could keep the Senate in Democratic hands ultimately. The House, I don't know. Our good friend Monroe Anderson is predicting that Dems will hold on to the House. I think it's too early to tell. Your thoughts on how this all plays out in November?
It is too early to tell, and I think it's just going to be very close. Again, so much is going on that's having an impact favorable to Democrats in many ways. I mean, when you look at the gun legislation, when you look at the Inflation Reduction Act passing, when you look at, what took place in Highland Park, what took place in Buffalo, New York, all of these things are going on. And of course, the Dobbs decision, so much is going on. And you see the Republicans on the extreme of everything. When you look at what was going on with the veterans, all of those things are happening at the same time. And the Republicans are just on the wrong side of all of these issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's got to favor the Democrats. I mean, at least I'm hoping that God knows we cannot lose a seat. Because if Mitch McConnell gets in the lead again, he is just waiting. He is just waiting to exact revenge.
Yeah. Well, I did note one exception to all the Republicans aboard the poor Donnie Trump bandwagon with the raid. Silence from Mitch McConnell. I don't know if you saw that. He hasn't. As of now, it may have changed. He had no comment on it. Well, and
I was just going to say, he's being silent pretty much on everything that has to do with Trump because he wants Trump in the rearview mirror.
Yes, Donald Trump's presence, as much as it may animate MAGA, it helps the Democrats. I'm convinced of that. Because Democrats fall asleep, Del Marie. You and I have talked about this many times. They tend to fall asleep. They don't pay attention. They're usually at fighting among themselves. Lord knows we know that's true. But one thing's for certain, they all dislike Donald Trump. You know what I mean? It's universal among Democrats. In fact, someone was telling me the other day that the reason that Alex Jones' problems, you know, he was for years shaking down his fans and supporters on his show, saying all kinds of outrageous stuff. But it was when he got into the political arena and went in bed with Trump, that's when people on the left started paying attention to him. Do you follow me, Del Marie? So Donald Trump's like the third rail. So in some level, I'm like, okay, Donnie, you want to run for president again? Go bring it.
And then when you look at the candidates that he endorsed, Donald Trump endorsed, I mean, and that's the other reason Mitch McConnell wants him in the rearview mirror, because these people may have gotten through the primary, but are they going to get through the general election? Because, again, they're extreme.
All right. That now I got to ask you. You raised it, so I got to ask you your thought. We've talked about this a lot on the show. I'm all over the map personally on this issue, mainly because I'm so anxiety ridden about the upcoming elections. Your thoughts about the Democratic strategy embraced by J.B. Pritzker right here in Illinois, to invest money on behalf in primaries of extremists. So in this case, campaign ads depicting Darren Bailey as an absolute MAGA extremist, knowing, hoping that that will inspire MAGA voters to show up and vote for Darren Bailey. It's supposed to be an attack ad, but it's really an attempt to lure them in like moths to a flame, on the grounds that it's easier. It will be they're easier to defeat than a quote unquote moderate like Richard Urban. Your thoughts on this strategy?
Well, to some degree, this strategy has been used in the past. This is not new strategy. It may be new in terms of being used in mass by so many people across the country, but it has been used, the strategy has been used in the past. And then the other part of that is, especially in the case of Darren Bailey, it buys you time to really do your opposition research. And to show the level of opposition research that Pritzker's people have done, the fact that we're showing Facebook posts from 2017 that we certainly wouldn't have known anything about, and that's a commercial already. We got two or three commercials of that already, and Pritzker doesn't need to say a word. Darren Bailey is doing it to himself.
Well, I'm still nervous.
Oh, I'm happy with it because you are taking a risk. Yeah. I mean, we know in Illinois it will work, but will it work everywhere?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm really nervous about Pennsylvania. I follow that election pretty closely with Doug Mastriano, who is maybe nuttier than Darren Bailey. I actually, I never thought this... We should move on because this is ancient history, but I don't know, Richard Urban, if he had been the nominee, the one thing that Pritzker would have had to worry about, in my humble opinion, was the funding, because there had been money from Ken Griffin. But he was such a flawed candidate for MAGA at this time, because he's so clearly not a MAGA man. You get what I'm saying? So I don't know. I never felt that Richard Urban was as much of a threat as the Pritzker people obviously did. You know what I'm saying, Demery? This notion that like he's moderate, so that could win over swing voters. Yeah, but it would also turn off MAGA voters. So
in the primary, he stopped being moderate. I mean, he wound up trying to reach over to the other side, to the extreme side of the Republicans, in order to get them. And so that's what was so insulting as an African American who actually liked him, thought he was I'm from afar, of course, I didn't know him, but just looking at him as the mayor of Aurora, I mean, I liked him. I had a good warm and fuzzy feeling about him. And then to see what he became in order to become the Republican nominee, I was just appalled by that.
Yeah, I wrote some articles, but yes, I agree with you.
You have no principles.
Yeah. So it's all, I say this many times. I just wondered if he had run as a Jim Thompson Republican or Adam Kinzinger in terms of Trump Republican, are there enough moderates in that field to gain him victory? I do not know the answer to that question, but he probably could feel better about himself in the morning if he run that kind of campaign. All right, let's switch local. I got to talk some local stuff with you before I let you go. There's two issues, the crime and the mayor's race. Why don't we deal with crime first? You had mentioned this to me earlier today, and I'd love for you to riff on it. The uptick in CTA crime, it's been in the newspapers. The Sun-Times just did a story about how there's been more crime on the CTA this year, I think, than in like 5 years. It's interesting how the chart goes, Delmarie. We seem to forget that there has always been crime in the city of Chicago to one degree to another. Your general thoughts on why there's a crime spike on the CTA in Chicago?
Well, I just wish that when we're talking about all of these issues, that we lay the blame at the feet of the people who are partly responsible for it. And, you know, we sort of walk, look at the issue and separate it from the public policies of the people who we elect, who are supposed to represent us and who are supposed to have our best interests at heart. I mean, when we look at what's going on with the CTA and the trains, all I can think about is the fact that Mayor Rahm Emanuel in 2011 removed conductors from the trains. And then a few years later, he, to much fanfare, put cameras and held a big news conference, and all the media covered it, and said, you know, I've got all these cameras now, and so we can see the crime. And I immediately said, I was sitting here watching the news, and I'm going, that's after the fact. They've done the crime already. What do I care if you saw them on camera, if they get away? And so now we're seeing all of that finally is coming back to haunt us. And it's those kinds of decisions that are, they were cost savings, I guess. You know, we're going to save money at the safety of other people. And now everybody is at risk. Black people, white people, poor people, rich people, anybody who's taking the train system is at risk. And now nobody knows what to do. Now everybody's up in arms trying to figure it out. But it's those decisions that are made early where you don't have anybody to say no.
Yeah.
The other elected officials who are there in city council, they don't say no. The media don't say no. They don't ask questions like, is this safe? You know, is this going to cause a problem? And then you cut mental health care by closing half of the city's clinics. And half of these people are mentally ill. And again, who needs more mental health care than Black people who are underserved, under-resourced, underemployed, and under siege?
No, that was passing a budget by a unanimous vote, 50-0. First budget, those mental health cuts and the CTA cuts as well. That's my part of the city budget. But that was in that general climate. Following Rahm's election in 2011, where he was ushered into the seat by essentially by President Obama, and the city basically ratified President Obama's choice, and I think that's very important. And then he was viewed as such a powerful mayor that he could destroy you if you dared to oppose him, and so he got that unanimous vote. And he used the remap, which came right after the vote, sort of keep the alderman in line. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want a ward that's favorable to you, you got to vote for me. I have always felt, and I think you share this, Del Marie, that falling in line with Chicago mayors is not a healthy way to run a city. And so you could go down the list of policy decisions made by all-powerful mayors with full support of the city council and the public, and now we're facing a consequence. Do you get what I'm saying? But the memory is so short, people are just like mad at Lori Lightfoot.
Right. And that's exactly all the things that we're seeing right now are decisions that were made from 30 to 40 years of bad public policy that hurt people who the least of these. Yeah. I mean, that's what this is all about. And it goes from Daley to Rahm and so whether Lori is the beneficiary of it or she's going to address it or whatever, I mean, it all comes down to the decisions made by the mayor and the voting of the city council and whether they're there to fall in lockstep with the mayor or there as a buffer. Yeah. And they're not there as a buffer. And that's the sad part about it. I mean, you see the city, you see where it is, you see it's going to hell in a handbasket. And many of the aldermen have been there and they've allowed it to happen. Yeah. They have not been the voices of their communities to say, no, you cannot do this. And then when you see some of those same people turn around and now they're going to reinvent themselves and run for mayor. mean, you're the reason the school started closing in the first place.
Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll get to the mayor's race. Before I do, I have to say this. I began the show by saying, I got to admit, I was pretty impressed with the Republican response, how quick it was to the raid of Donald Trump's. Not that I agree with it, but I was impressed by it. I have to make another confession. I'm really impressed with the branding ability of Rahm Emanuel. This guy is really, I call him the maestro because he directs media coverage of him in the city. So well, he's not even in Chicago. He's in Japan. He's the ambassador to Japan. So first of all, that you were on the show opposing it, his confirmation by the Senate didn't matter. He got MAGA people to support him. Now he's in Japan rehabilitating himself.
And then he got nine black aldermen to write letters of support.
Let that one hang there for a second. Yes, he did. So now he's in Japan, and I've never seen an ambassador get so much local coverage as Rahm. And my beloved Bright one, the Chicago Sun-Times, Rahm's in there, I would say, at least once a week. You know what I'm saying? Just now with the Nancy Pelosi visit to she went to Taiwan and she had a stopover in Japan. Rahm got like two articles out of it with a picture and everything. Rahm riding the subways, got a picture and an article. And I'm like, you know, this man is already plotting one step ahead of everybody else. And he's trying to figure out his next move. And my guess is it will be to run for Senate. Because he's getting quote unquote foreign policy experience so he can present himself as a serious man of the world.
When I was standing in Washington by myself saying that he should not be ambassador to Japan, I was saying if we allow him to rehabilitate himself, he will come back as senator from Illinois once Durbin decides to step down. And if anybody out there doesn't think that that's what this is all about, then they're not thinking, because that is what this is all about. I mean, when you say he's like the Republicans, yes, he's plotting 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 steps ahead. And while we're sitting there looking at what's happening right in front of us, he's already down the road in his planning, just like the Republicans.
Yeah.
And if we don't start doing that, not only as Democrats, but as African Americans in particular, because we're the ones who are at the bottom of every index. We're at the bottom. And we're not at the bottom because we're inferior. We're at the bottom because of the public policies that have been passed that do not help us, and that we allow to happen and keep allowing to happen because we want somebody to like us. And quite frankly, I don't give a damn if you like me or not. I just want you to do right by me.
All right. So that's a perfect segue into the mayor's race. Lori Lightfoot, of course, is running for reelection. At the moment, I can't do off the top of my head. I think there's 8 candidates who've announced that they're running against her. Your early thoughts on the race. Are there any out there that you think could defeat her one-on-one? Because I assume you agree with me that this is coming one way or the other. It's going to be a runoff. So all these candidates are fighting for the right to come in second. Right. Because I think Lori Lightfoot will get the most votes in the first round. So your general thoughts about the early stages of the mayor's race.
Well, I think we still haven't seen all those people who are going to jump in. I think we've got, I would say, I'm going to say 5 more people will jump in to the race before it's over. It's anyone's race. And it'll just be interesting. What's going to be really interesting is if another black woman jumps in there, because Lori can say, you know, all these men, and running against me. But if another black woman jumps in there, then it becomes a very different race.
Well, Sophia King, you're alderman. I believe you told me that. Yeah, you're in the 4th ward. I used to think you were in the 3rd ward, but I guess redistricting put you in the 4th ward.
I used to be in the 2nd ward all my life.
Okay, second ward. My God, the second ward bears no, the current second ward, I don't want to give out too much long history lesson, bears no relation to the second ward that Delmarie Cobb is talking about. The second ward traditionally was a black ward in the south side of Chicago, in the near south side of Chicago. And that was William Dawson country way, 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 many, many, many years ago.
Give me started, man.
I know the history lesson. I'm going to stop right there. And now, of course, it's a yuppie ward. Well, I don't even know if yuppies exist anymore, but it's sort of an upscale ward that's hideously deformed, crosses in and out of many neighborhoods, more or less on the Gold Coast and the North Side. William Dawson couldn't get elected anything in that ward. If for somehow or other he was magically brought back to life.
And being represented by somebody who can be more antithetical than William Dawson and Bobby Rush, and because Bobby was the alderman of the second ward too.
Yes, Bobby Rush was the alderman. That's he got his start in politics as alderman of the second ward in 1983. Was victorious the year Harold won, and then of course gave that up to run for Congress. So Sophia King, she gets in the race again. In my opinion, it's a battle to get in second. So I look at an alderman like Sophia King and I say she has a chance because there's a group of constituents in the city who presumably know and like her constituents. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I see a path for her to make the runoff. I see a path for a lot of these candidates that I don't particularly like at all, like Paul Vallis. I see a path for him to make the runoff. I can't imagine someone beating Lori Lightfoot from the right. To me, Sophia King would have a much greater chance one-on-one against Lori Lightfoot than Paul Vallis. What's your sense of Sophia King's chances?
No, I agree with you that I don't think you beat Lori from the right. No, you beat Lori from the left because on many of the issues that she ran on that were progressive when she was running, she still hasn't fulfilled. And so all you have to do is run on those issues, and the fact that in 4 years, why haven't they happened? Mainly the civilian oversight of the police department.
Yeah, that seems to be a lost issue, Delmarie. I booked so many guests that you've asked me to book to talk about that down through the years. This seems to be a lost issue with crime on the CTA up, carjackings up, etc. You know what I'm saying? The idea of oversight of the police just seems to be a lost issue in the city of Chicago. Do you see it the same way?
Yet we still have all these police misconduct incidents. Yeah. And so they haven't lessened. Yeah. We're still under a consent decree. And so, you know, where is that? So, I mean, there are issues out here to run on.
Yeah. My guess, before it's all said and done, Pat Quinn will jump in the race, former Governor Pat Quinn. My guess is that someone tied to the Chicago Teachers Union will jump in. So like a Brandon Johnson. And would you say there's still five people out there that might jump in? I would guess that two of them would be Pat Quinn and Brandon Johnson. Do you have any other names you want to add to that list?
There may be a couple more that I'm hearing. So elected officials. Some who are already elected officials. So we just heard Gary Chico is still mulling a run.
Now I don't see a path unless he's got big money from downtown business interests. I don't see a path.
No,
for Gary Chico, he's never been elected to anything. So
no. And he keeps trying.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely keeps trying. My sense of it right now is that Lori Lightfoot will prevail. I've been saying that all along. And feel free to close the show by vigorously and vehemently disagreeing with me. I'm looking forward to that. I feel takes a lot to get Chicagoans to change course. One thing I've learned about Chicago, living here all these years, Dunmarie, they're kind of a, what's the right word? Cautious group of people. They get to know somebody and it's like an old glove and they don't want to get rid of it. Not saying Lori Lightfoot's an old glove, Lori Lightfoot friends. I'm just searching for a metaphor. So that's my general sense of it, that Lori Lightfoot, and plus her nastiness, I think, is an attraction to many voters who think you need a bully to be a mayor. Your response?
Well, I'm going to say that it's not like we haven't had one term only mayors. Jane Byrne, Michael Bolandic. So it's not like it's never happened. And so anything is possible.
Yeah. Fair enough. And we would have had one, would have, should have, could have, had Tony Preckwell gotten the race in 2015. But that too is ancient history, Dunmarie Cobb. Let's not revisit that one. But man, she was ahead in the polls over Rahm, like 50-something percent to Rahm's in the 30s.
Exactly. You know?
And somehow or other, he got her out of the race.
Now, these people, when they wait for the seat to open, I always say, you can't wait for the seat to open. You just got to jump in there.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of which, open seats, we didn't get a chance to talk first congressional district. And that seat opened up because of Bobby Rush. And, of course, Jonathan Jackson was victorious. If I had still been a gambler, I would have made money. I told everybody, never bet against the Jacksons. And particularly since all you need is a plurality. There's not even a runoff to win a majority. Do you follow me, Dunmarie? So who's in second in that race? I can't remember.
Oh, it's Pat Dow.
So, okay, just think about it. Pat Dow versus Jackson in a runoff. I still think Jackson would have won, but.
Oh, he would have.
Yeah.
I mean, mainly, and of course I had reporters asking me, you know, well, is there fatigue with the Jacksons and so on, so on, so on, so on. And I'm like, you know, the bottom line is familiarity breeds disrespect. We here in Chicago, we're like, ah, the Jacksons, you know, but around the rest of the world, Jackson is lauded around the rest of the world. And so the idea that, you know, Jonathan had to be talked into it. I mean, it's not like he was sitting there saying, oh, when Bobby steps down, I'm going to run. He really had to think about it. And then he decided, you know, I'm going to go for it. And he got in late. He got a little slow start. But then, you know, the connections and the ability to raise money and to get on television and all those things, that took him ahead of the pack.
Yeah. Listen, I told you this before. I'll say it again. Over the year, Jesse Jackson's been around for as long as I can remember. I mean, the name Jesse Jackson has been in my mind since I was in junior high. All right. And I've had gone through various phases with him. It's similar to Roland Burris. We were talking about him off air. We could do a whole show about this, like my changing attitudes about people who've been around for a long time. But to me, Jesse Lewis Jackson is one of the few politicians that my respect for him has increased as time has gone on. I know every flaw he's got, Dunmarie. Okay. I've either wrote about it or read about it or heard about it. You know what I mean? So you can't give me anything new on him, but it just seems like he's just been consistent for how many years is that now?
But what you do. Yeah. And what you do know is that they are going to be on the right side of the issues. I mean, I don't know them ever to be on the wrong side of an issue where it came to, the greater good. And for me, that means everything more so than the person. And so if I had two people that I probably could have been very happy with no matter what, and Jonathan was one of them. And so I'm you know, if it had to be any one of those two, Jonathan is fine with me, because I do think that the first congressional district will be in good hands. He can hit the ground running. He knows most of the people there. His father knows all of the people there. And so it's not like he's going to be handicapped when he gets there. He's going to be in great shape.
Who was the other candidate that you'd have been okay with?
I would have been okay with Jackie Collins.
Oh, Jackie Collins. Should bring her on the show. State Senator Jackie Collins. Yeah, she's a very good progressive. Absolutely. All right. Very good. Delmarie Cobb, thank you so much for taking time coming to talk to me. We didn't even get to the governor's race. I'll bring you back for that. That will be kicking into gear after Labor Day. Darren Bailey representing MAGA, hoping to overtake the state. Your early sense, just we'll leave it with this, early sense of how that race is shaping up.
Well, I think we're going to see a lot more commercials on Darren Bailey, especially from his social media posts that we would have never seen otherwise. And so I don't think Pritzker has anything to worry about. I think what Pritzker needs to do is to make amends with the Black community, because the word is in the Black community is that because he has so much money, he doesn't feel like he has to meet with the Black community about anything.
Well, you heard it, J.B. Pritzker and Delmarie Cobb. And I know you know J.B. from a long, long time ago, so maybe he'll take your advice on that one, Delmarie.
I doubt it.
Doubt it, she says. All right, Delmarie, thank you very much. I appreciate it as always. You take care, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, that's great, Delmarie Cobb. I also want to thank the man, the myth, the legend, the pride of George Mullen, Illinois, without whom this show would be possible. And as Delmarie Cobb and Jesse Louis Jackson will tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. D, and the D stands for DeMarvelous. Give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.